Hello, welcome to Literally from the North Shore, and thanks for tuning in. Today we continue with KTWH volunteer Beth Alexander's reading of Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach's book, A River Through Two Harbors. This book chronicles fictional North Shore law enforcement officer Deidre Johnson, who uncovers a crime ring that is trafficking Native girls to the harbor in Duluth. This book contains mature themes and may not be appropriate for all listeners. We pick up where Beth left off last time.
"Don't pass out on me, you SOB," she snapped. "Put your hands behind your back, wrists together." She looped a tie around each wrist and hooked a third through both of them, cinching it tight and drawing his hands together so they touched. "Sit down over there," she pointed at a wood bench against the wall. "You, stand up," Deidre ordered La Terrell. Not being wounded, he was the more dangerous of the two. "Belly up to the wall and put your hands behind you." With his face pressed against the logs of the building and his hands behind his back, La Terrell was rendered practically immobile. Deidre repeated the same process she had used on his accomplice. "Sit down on the bench next to him." La Terrell shuffled across the floor and dropped down onto the bench, the wall to his back. "Where's the key to the lock on the cabin?" she demanded. The men responded by sneering at her. Neither said a word. "Watch these two," she said to Pete, "but don't even think about shooting either one of them. There's no way they're going to overpower you from where they're at." Deidre looked at the heavy rifle Pete had in his hands. "But if one of them is stupid enough to come after you, crack him over the head with your gun barrel. It looks thick enough to split his head open pretty good." She glared at La Terrell, who shifted his eye contact away. Deidre ran from the lodge to the cabin. Even before she reached the door, she could hear one of the girls counting. 76, 77, 78. "Are you doing okay?" she shouted. "Yeah, we're okay," someone answered, her voice quavering. "I don't know where to find a key to this lock, so I'm going to try to find a hammer or something I can use to break it. If I can't find something, we'll break out a window and I'll come inside and free you, okay?" "Okay." "I'll be back, I promise," she reassured the captives. She heard a weak, "Okay." And she could see it was in use. Using her flashlight, she was able to explore inside and found a splitting maul leaning up against the far wall. Deidre shouldered the heavy implement and jogged back to the cabin. "I've got a maul and I'm going to break the lock off the door. Don't be alarmed." She took a swing at the lock, but in the dark she missed and struck the door. The sound reverberated inside. By feel, Deidre placed the head of the maul on the lock, set her feet a measured distance from her target, and swung again. This time she felt the heavy hammer strike the lock and heard something snap. She felt where the lock had been and discovered it was loose but not entirely opened. Deidre repeated the process, this time with more effort, and she was rewarded with the sound of metal hitting the deck's floor. She released the hasp and pushed the door open. At first, the stench stung her senses, but she recovered in time to force herself to enter the room. The girls looked at her through hollow, expressionless eyes. "It'll take me a minute to get these off your ankles. Be patient." Deidre bent over the bed to which the nearest girl was chained. "This shouldn't be too hard to break," she said, more to herself than to them. She spoke directly to the girl. "The chain is long enough that you can scrunch up near the head of the bed while I cut one of the links. Move up now. Good." Laying the chain over the 4x4 timber which served as a bedpost, Deidre swung them all as hard as she could. The axe-like side of the head bent one of the links and made a cut partway through. She set the link on edge and hit it with the hammer side of the maul. The link doubled in half and snapped where it had been partially cut. The first girl was freed. Deidre moved to the next bed and repeated the process. In minutes, she completed the task. "Do you have any other clothing?" The girls shook their heads. "Shoes?" Again, a head shake was all she got. "I'm going to the lodge to get something for you. Stay right here, promise?" They nodded, still not believing what was happening. On the way to the lodge, Deidre was racked with fear that they would panic and make a run for the woods, and she thought that perhaps she should have locked the door from the outside by shoving a stick through the hasp lock. There was no way she could have locked them up again. In minutes, she was able to return with several pairs of wool socks, which she instructed them to pull over their feet. When each of them wore a double layer, Deidre told them to wrap their blankets around their shoulders, and she led them up the path to the lodge. Chapter 32. When Deidre and the girls entered the lodge, they had to walk in front of the two bound men, and one of the girls began to sob uncontrollably. Deidre placed her arm around her skinny shoulders, and she could feel the girl trembling. She was sure she knew why the girl was terrified at being in the lodge and in their presence. She whisked them past the two men who were sitting on the bench and leaning against the wall and ushered the victims into a separate room. "Don't worry at all. Their hands are tied so tightly they'll never get loose. Not only that, my friend has a very large gun, and I think he'd like a reason to use it. I'm here too, and believe me, I can take care of them if I have to. Can I get you anything? Water? Food? Anything?" She looked at their eyes and saw nothing but fear. In a weak voice, one girl asked, "Can I go to the bathroom?" The question stumped Deidre, and she went to the other room. "Is there a toilet around here?" One of the men shifted his feet. "There's an outhouse in the back. Knock yourself out." Deidre escorted the poor girl out the back door and to the outdoor toilet. She waited outside while the girl did what she came to do and heard the girl whimper from pain as she passed her liquid. "Those darn animals," she thought, as the door opened and the girl looked at her, tears in her eyes. They made their way back into the lodge. "Stay in this room. I'm going to make arrangements to get us all out of here. I'll be in the other room. If you need anything, need to know I'm still here, call my name and I'll answer you. My name is Deidre. Do you understand?" All three nodded. She moved into the other room, leaving the door half open. "Pete, we've got to get some help. My cell phone registered 0 bars, and I don't think we can get any reception until we reach Highway 61. That would take way too long. Do any of your neighbors have a landline?" Pete didn't have to think. "Mrs. Ostberg has one. She's about 5 miles on the other side of me, off Highway 1. Do you want me to go?" "I think that'd be best. You know the way, and the girls would probably feel safer with me than with another man. Do you mind?" Pete turned to La Terrell. "Where's the snow machine?"
"Don't know what you're talking about."
"Don't play stupid with me," Pete snapped. He was a different person than Deidre was used to. "You didn't walk in from the road, and I saw the snowmobile tracks on the trail. Where is it?"
Deidre heard the hammer on his rifle click into firing position, and she was stepping forward when La Terrell, his pupils dilated with fear, answered, "It's out back. There's a small shed beside the toilet. We keep it there. The key's in the ignition." He glared at the floor. Deidre found a scrap of paper, and using a pen she had in her pocket, she scribbled 3 numbers. "Call this number. It's the sheriff's number. Tell him I need a couple of deputies, and they should get here as soon as they can. Then call 911 and have them send out 2 search and rescue units. Tell them to bring sleds and transportation for 3 girls and an injured man. Finally, this is the home number of Zach Burton. Identify yourself by saying you are calling at my request. Tell him I need him to be here as soon as possible. Give him the directions. He'll be able to find it on a map." Pete walked out the back door. In minutes, the roar of a snowmobile engine disrupted the winter silence of the wilderness, and Deidre saw the taillights of the machine disappear over the hill. She stood at the window a few seconds. The moon had risen, and under normal conditions, she would have turned out the lights and watched the muted shadows produced by moon glow as it reflected from the pristine snow. Tonight, however, she was in a tenuous position and turned back to face her prisoners. She pulled up a chair so she could face them and kept the pistol on her lap. It was difficult for her to look at the men, difficult to remain silent, but she knew it would be futile to say anything. They looked at the floor. She watched them for any threatening movement. The stalemate lasted for nearly an hour before she saw the single headlight of the snowmobile bouncing up and down and side to side as Pete returned to the lodge. He walked in and stomped his feet to dislodge the snow from his boots. Deidre noticed a ring of frost on his parka hood, and his nose was red and running. "It's bitter cold out there," he announced. "Looks like it will be the coldest night of the year." Pete relieved Deidre of guard duty, and she checked on the girls. "How you doing?" They shrugged. "Do you know Kimmy Thomas?" All 3 girls jerked upright. "How do you know Kimmy?" one of them asked. "I thought you'd like to know. She's safe in a hospital in Duluth." "Is she alive? I mean, is she okay?" another girl blurted out. Deidre nodded. "She's fine and will be returning to Canada very soon." "How about Allison? Did you know her?"
"Yes, yes. What about her?"
"She's with Kimmy. You must know Jean, too. She's also there. All 3 are doing fine, and they're going to be so happy to see you. I know they will." Tears of joy and disbelief ran down their cheeks, and they spent the next 15 minutes questioning Deidre. She answered as best she could, then left the girls to talk among themselves about their friends. Pete sat back in his chair and rested his rifle across both knees.
What kind of rifle is that? Deidre asked, wanting to relieve some of her tension by talking about a subject that didn't much matter.
This old thing, Pete said as he laid his hands on the gun's breech. I got this from an old timer years ago. I was only 19, but already working in the woods, so I had a few bucks to spend at the time. He had a son he wanted to give it to, but the kid wanted a new .30-06. Well, the old man got mad and offered it to me. I traded a beat-up chainsaw and $10 for it, even up. Best gun I ever owned. It's only a .30-30, but it shoots real straight. And see the extra-long magazine? Holds 10 shots, counting the one in the barrel. You can really crank them off in a hurry if you know how to work the action. I've dropped more deer with this rifle than I can remember.
Deidre was surprised it was only a .30-30 caliber, but she supposed the octagonal barrel gave it the appearance of being larger.
Can I have a drink of something? The wounded man growled.
What is there? Deidre asked.
There's a bottle of brandy under the counter and beer in the kitchen.
No water? Deidre asked.
None fit to drink, he answered.
Well, then I guess you're out of luck, she said. He spat on the floor and mumbled something under his breath.
Suffer, you brute, she thought, and went in the other room to check on the girls. She sat on one of the beds.
How you doing? She inquired.
One girl smiled tentatively.
We're okay. Can you tell us what's going to happen to us?
Deidre realized she had been so wrapped up in dealing with a suspect, she had neglected the victims, something she believed happened too often in the system.
I've called for help. They should be here very soon.
Search and rescue will take you out to the road on sleds. From there, you'll be transported to the hospital in Duluth. She looked at the girl who had used the outhouse. You're having some trouble peeing, aren't you?
The girl nodded and crossed her legs at the thought.
They'll get that cleared up for you in no time. Do any of you have problems that need attention right now?
The other two shook their heads.
Okay, then depending on how much care you need in the hospital, I think you'll be back in Thunder Bay in a week or so. Do you have families?
One girl began to cry. I have a mother. Don't know where my dad is. She and I used to fight a lot because she didn't like my friends and what we did.
The last time I saw her, she told me I couldn't go out, but I did anyway. Went to a party. The next thing I knew, I woke up in a canoe. It was dark and I had no idea where I was or where I was being taken. My hands and feet were tied together and they put duct tape over my mouth. I ended up here.
Do you know when that was? Deidre wanted to know.
August. There were 7 other girls in the cabin, but every few days some would disappear and then they would be replaced. I don't know why I didn't get taken.
Deidre looked at her youthful beauty and her shapely body. The thought crossed her mind that perhaps the traffickers were saving her for a special client.
Were Anna and Kimmy in the cabin with you?
The same girl answered.
Anna was able to pry the chain loose from the bed, and she offered to help free us. Kimmy was the only one who had the courage to go with her. They were gone only a couple of hours when Latourelle and Jameson dragged Anna back to the cabin.
Is he the other guy out there? She asked, motioning with her head.
That's him. Like I said, they dragged her into the cabin. She was so scared she couldn't talk. We all were.
Latourelle said to watch what was going to happen to Anna and learn what happens to girls who try to run away.
She looked at the floor and swallowed hard.
I guess I can't tell you what they did to her. She wept openly, her body convulsing with each sob. The other two girls wrapped their arms around themselves.
I know. I found her body and was present when the medical examiner finished her autopsy. It was brutal. I'm so sorry you had to endure what you have.
What about you two? Do you have family waiting for you?
I was living on the streets, one of the other victims said with flat affect. What will happen to me?
Deidre smiled at her.
The head of the Anishinaabe Aski Nation has assured me that you'll be well taken care of. Their social service network is already working on behalf of Allison and Jean, and I'm positive they'll work for you too. You're going to be okay. She wished she believed her words.
The third girl looked away and stared at the wall.
They're coming, Pete shouted from the other room.
Deidre hurried to the door and stepped outside. She counted 4 single headlights bouncing along the trail leading to the lodge. In minutes, she was meeting with 4 members of search and rescue and 2 sheriff's deputies. She directed the EMT-trained rescue members to where the girls were and stepped aside to allow them to enter the cabin. One looked after Jameson. The others cared for the girls in the bedroom.
Let me take a look at your back, he said to Jameson.
The man stood and turned around.
Take these darn straps off my wrists so I can move my arm.
Oh, sure, right away, the EMT said, sarcasm dripping from the words. Stand still so I can get a better look.
He could see where the slug had entered his back, about 4 inches from the left of his spine, but because of the angle of the shot, it hadn't penetrated the rib cage. Instead, there was a neat puncture wound where it had entered, but the exit point had blown out a piece of flesh the size of a golf ball. It had also removed some skin and a little flesh from the inside of his bicep.
You're lucky that old man is a good shot, mister, or you'd be dead by now. Of course, maybe he isn't that good and missed where he was aiming. Either way, you'll live. Always going to have a reminder, though.
He placed a gauze compress on the open wound and bound it tightly with a bandage. Jameson winced and cursed, and Deidre thought the EMT was being none too gentle. The rescue squad had brought sleeping bags with them, and they helped each girl into one. Then each was gently lifted and carried outside to a waiting ride. As they went by her, one of the girls asked, "Will we get to see Allison and Jean?"
Deidre smiled. "Of course you will,"
and she brushed a lock of hair from the girl's eyes. Now she had to decide what to do with the two suspects, because technically she had no authority to make an arrest. She addressed one of the deputies. "In the confusion, I didn't read these two their rights, although I actually tied them up for my own safety. I'm requesting that you arrest them for kidnapping, assault with a deadly weapon, battery, and anything else you can think of." A look of disbelief crossed the deputy's face. They had almost created what would have been a major faux pas. He began, "You have the right," and continued until the two men had been read their Miranda rights. Deidre breathed a sigh of relief. Neither man had said anything that would have been used in court, and now anything they said could be used against them. Not only that, now they were in the custody of the Lake County Sheriff's Department and were no longer her responsibility.
"Do you need a ride out?" the deputy asked.
"No, you go do what you have to do. We'll walk."
She put her arm around Pete's shoulders. "Come on, friend. Supper's getting cold."
Chapter 33. The moon was near full and high in the sky as she and Pete trekked through the silence. What sounded like the crack of a rifle shot split the icy air, and both she and her companions spun around to see who was behind them. They burst out laughing, because it had only been the sound of a tree splitting from the extreme cold. Deidre took in the beauty of the moonlight reflecting off the snow, and she thought she could have read a book, it was so bright. As they neared the road, they could see lights and hear the voices of people. The deputies hadn't driven off with their prisoners, neither had the rescue people pulled away. Evidently, they were taking their time, making sure all was in order. She walked up to a group huddled around a car that hadn't been there when she had started in and elbowed her way through the knot of bodies.
"You sure have a way of being in the middle of things," Zach Burton said, a huge grin cutting his face.
"I can't believe you did this. It was pretty stupid, or gutsy. I'm not sure which." He paused. "But I'm sure glad you're okay.
We decided the deputies will take the suspects in. Jameson will be housed in the jail, and LaTourelle will go to the ER. My guess is that he'll join Jameson by tomorrow.
Is there any place we can go to talk?"
Deidre was exhausted and hungry.
"Tell you what, Zach, come with me and Pete. We'll have a bite to eat at his place, and then we can go to my cabin. We can talk as long as you want. I'll give you the good bed, and you can stay the night, then leave in the morning. I've got company coming in the afternoon. What do you say?"
Zach looked pleased. "How can I turn down an offer like that?"
By the time they arrived at Pete's, the stew had hardly had a chance to cool, and he reheated it in a few minutes. Deidre had little appetite and picked at the meal. As she raised her fork to her mouth, her hand trembled, and she hoped the other two didn't notice. She was relieved to see that they were engrossed in the food.
"This stew is incredible," Zach said as he ladled another helping into his bowl.
Deidre left hers half full and pushed away from the table.
"Finish up, Zach. I need to get home." She called her dog over to her and pat his head.
"I bet you want to go home too," she said, scratching his ears while he looked at her through sad eyes as only a Labrador retriever can. Zach was entranced by Deidre's cabin. "Most of us would give anything to have a place like this," he said, a little envious of what she had.
"Yeah, it's nice, but it can get pretty lonely up here, especially during the winter."
"No one in your life then?" Zach questioned, not meaning to get personal.
"Not really, just me and Pete," was all she answered, and looked at her dog, who raised his head at the sound of his name. His tail thumped on the floor, but he didn't get up from his spot near the stove.
"How are you doing?" Zack asked, concern in his voice.
"Okay, I guess."
"Shoot, I'm not okay. I couldn't eat my supper. I'm a ball of nerves, and I'm angry, angry at those men. Angry that I didn't figure this out sooner. Angry that I know we haven't stopped the abuse of women."
Deidre's feelings spilled out. She went to her cupboard. "Want something to drink?"
"What are you having?"
"Brandy Coke. Want one?"
"Sounds good."
Deidre dumped a few ice cubes in each of two glasses, added brandy from a half-empty bottle, and topped the drink off with a little Coca-Cola. Zack took a sip and shuddered and coughed.
"Too strong?" she asked. Zack cleared his throat.
"Just right. I know we haven't drained the headwaters of their operation, but we sure have cut off one of its feeder streams. Because of you, 6 girls are still alive and have a chance at a new start. There'll be no more women funneled to Duluth down this route. All we can do is keep working and making a difference one life at a time."
"What happens to the attorney, Gerald Coulter?" Deidre needed to know. "And Judge DeMarcus?"
"You didn't read this morning's paper?"
To her, this morning seemed like last month. She shook her head.
"The judge was last seen drinking at a bar Christmas Eve. Yesterday, friends checked on him at home. He was lying on the floor, dead. Shot himself through the mouth with a .38 caliber pistol. He left a 3-page suicide letter. I haven't seen it yet, but a copy will be on my desk when I get back. Would you like to read it?"
Deidre had to think about the question.
"The next time I'm in Duluth," she affirmed. "As for Coulter," Zack continued, "on Monday, I'll turn over the files we have on him, along with a copy of what was on the flash drive you gave us. We're dealing with a federal offense, and we'll let a federal prosecutor handle the case against him. Hopefully, that investigation will lead to others who are involved. How about you? What are your plans?"
"Retire, again." Deidre laughed half-heartedly. She didn't have a plan. "I suppose I'll spend some time alone, try to sort things out. Maybe I'll move back into civilization, 2 harbors, maybe even Duluth."
She stopped talking. Why did she say Duluth? The thought had never crossed her mind before.
Deidre looked at her watch. "My God, it's 1:30. I have to get some sleep. Towels and washcloths are under the sink. Help yourself. Just don't borrow my toothbrush."
She wobbled as she stood up. The drink had been potent.
Zack placed his hand on her arm to steady her. "Take care of yourself, Deidre. The world needs people like you."
She looked at him and was struck by the sincerity expressed by his eyes.
"Thanks, Zack." She made it to her bed and crawled beneath the covers, still clothed but shoeless.
Deidre was awakened by Pete's cold nose nudging her hand that was draped over the side of the bed. He whined and pranced toward the door. She sat up, squinted her eyes to make out the numbers on her digital clock. 6:31.
"Ah, Pete, this early?" she mumbled, but climbed out of bed to let him out to do his thing.
The cold, late December air cleared her head. By the time she threw a couple of billets of wood on the stove, she was almost awake. Almost. She made a pot of coffee and sat so she could look out her living room window. Cedar Lake was frozen solid, and along the far shore she saw 2 timber wolves following what she suspected was a deer.
You've been listening to episode 17 of A River Through 2 Harbors by Minnesota author Dennis Hirschbach. There will be a total of 19 episodes in this reading, so be sure to tune in next time for more from A River Through 2 Harbors. If you miss an episode, you can find it on our website, ktwh.org, by clicking on Programs and then Literally from the North Shore on the drop-down list. Each weekend, we'll post the episodes for you to catch up on. To learn more about human trafficking in Minnesota, go to www.yourcallmn.org. Please join us again next time for A River Through 2 Harbors here on Literally from the North Shore.